everybody. This is John Marks, the editor of CopsAlive.com. I want to welcome you to another edition of Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. I'm very excited today. We have a very important topic for you on the importance of getting enough sleep in law enforcement to deal with the issues of fatigue. Our guest today is Dr. Mary Umloff, who is a well-respected sleep researcher and nursing professor, who is the chair of a national educational initiative called the Wake Up Squad, which is sponsored by Cephalon. She has been invited as a content expert on sleep and shift work disorder to discuss the science behind sleep and sleep disorders, the health implications of insufficient sleep, and the importance of sleep hygiene. Thank you very much for being with us, and welcome, Dr. Umloff.
Thank you. I'm really glad to have an opportunity to speak to your audience because all of our public service workers are out there working all those shifts, and it's really an important health message for them to have.
Well, thank you. And I want to let our listeners know that you and I met previously on a focus group that was done by the Wake Up Squad. And we were a part of I was part of a group of a variety of people that work shift work. And we had a very interesting discussion about the impacts of working shifts and what happens when you don't sleep well. And that doesn't even really matter whatever shift you're on. But we have some really interesting topics, so I'd like to be quiet and let you sort of take over and share with us some of your insights based on the work you've been doing.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the chance to talk about this. I am a registered nurse, so I'm all about health. And what's interesting about this topic is that sleep science is still a relatively new science area. And, you know, we've sort of learned some lessons as a culture here in America about nutrition mm-hmm. over the past, 10, 15 years, about how important nutrition is. Well, unfortunately, in our 24-hour society, we've ignored how important sleep is, and it's just as important as nutrition. It is a bona fide physiological need. And that we consider it a disposable commodity, that you will always hear people say very confidently, well, I'm going to work all day, and then we're going to drive to Florida tonight, and we're talking about, overnight driving, and, college students will get through with exams and then try to drive home overnight. And I know as public service workers, you've seen those kinds of disasters on the highway where someone falls asleep, and it's an absolute misnomer for people to believe that you don't need sleep and that you can do things to prevent it, when actually the need for sleep, sleepiness, is a physiological drive like hunger. Now, I haven't found too many people who can just sort of wish away their hunger or think that they can really, eat poorly all week and then have a salad on the weekend and make up for it. Well, people think that way about sleep, and for people who do shift work, and I mean any kind of irregular work schedules, whether it be going to work at very early hours, say 2 or 3 in the morning, or even 6 in the morning, or even working what some people might call the evening shift, and those people who rotate shifts, who go from, days to nights to evenings, which is the worst kind of rotation physiologically, mm-hmm. that these people also face other kinds of health issues related to our natural circadian rhythm, which is our natural, it's the way humans have evolved to be active in the daylight and to be asleep in the darkness. And that wasn't a problem until we invented electricity and candles, I guess. But this is not the way human beings were developed. As a result, we have these natural body clocks that will signal us when we're out of sync with it. And the way it signals us is that, for instance, there are some people who are extremely intolerant to working the night shift or overnight. They will experience extreme sleepiness in spite of the fact that they have done everything to get the normal allotted amount of sleep for them. and that they will have extreme sleepiness. And then conversely, they may also have insomnia when they do try to go to sleep, you know, sometime in the daylight in the morning. Well, there are several different things at play there. Certainly one is the body clock, and the other is the conditioning of the body to be ready to go to sleep when it's time to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. But the notion of extreme sleepiness during sleep and insomnia that may follow is a bona fide medical condition called shift work disorder. And it is a treatable condition, and it is, as I said, a bona fide medical disorder. And a lot of people that we've been talking to, it's interesting on the blog, very quickly identify with this and identify with the symptoms, because some of the symptoms also include problems with aggravation of heart disease or GI or stomach problems, problems with depression and irritability, which, you know, plays out in terms of our relationships with our families and other people. And that also there may be work-related behavior problems such as lack of attention or, you know, our tendency to perhaps some risk-taking or memory lapses, which plays out in terms of work performance. And, in fact, there is a physiologically noted condition called microsleep. When a person is extremely sleep-deprived or sleep-deprived, that they will have periods when, essentially, it's hard to describe, except the lights go out.
Yeah.
It's, you know, they can be driving along, and instantaneously they will fall asleep for, you know, a period of seconds. But if you're traveling at 70 miles an hour, that's a lot of distance to be covered, and that's a lot of drift on the highway.
Yeah.
So that, and these people will not be ready for it. They will not anticipate it, except they know they're very sleepy. They may wake up right away. They have been asleep. And that's called microsleep. So the body will persist in its messages to the human, but the human has to pay attention. And from a health perspective, you know, the Wake Up Squad, its initiative is a public health education initiative for disease awareness about shift work disorder. And, of course, it is sponsored by Cephalon, but we're not, you know, advertising medication. We're advocating and promoting people to be alert, you know, to potentially identify if they have these symptoms, because it's relevant for family members as well as the worker themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And on our website, you can get a symptom checklist, which is very helpful, because a lot of people that go to the doctor, they forget exactly what the details they want to talk about. And also, not every healthcare provider is informed about this particular sleep disorder, because sleep science, again, is relatively new. And that when you bring them something like this, that's a legitimate kind of, you know, symptom checklist, they can at least follow through with that individual and recommend what is best for them, which may also include screening for other sleep disorders, which may be aggravating the situation, you know, sleep apnea and that sort of thing, or restless leg syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's really, you know, I really love working in the area of sleep science and sleep medicine, because sleep conditions are treatable. And that's the other piece that people don't really realize, that yeah, you can have it, but there is a, you know, there is a remedy. Now, sometimes the remedy is, you know, you have to do things. You actually have to, you know, exercise at the right time, which is not right before you go to bed. You do have to sleep in a cool, quiet, dark environment, which means turning off the phone, you know, turning off the sound of the answering machine. You know, warning your family members, you know, your distant family members, don't call me, you know, during my sleep interval, and I promise not to call you during your sleep interval, that you have to have cooperation. But there are things you actively have to do. Even people who exercise, you shouldn't be exercising in the interval just prior to your sleep interval, say within 2 or 3 hours, because physiologically a higher body temperature works against falling asleep.
Mm.
The natural physiological process for going asleep is a drop in body temperature. And normally the body will do that. But if you raise it with exercise, then you're making it more difficult for you to go to sleep when it's time. So, you know, going to the gym before you have your sleep interval is not a good plan.
Well,
it's also not a good plan to eat a large meal before you go to bed. Most people understand that. Also, not using caffeinated products with caffeine, which is cola, coffee, tea. Iced tea really will have a lot of caffeine. I live in the South. We drink a lot of tea. So you really have to do things, you know, and I can be the bearer of bad news here, but, there are, what we call sleep hygiene techniques that you have to follow. It's no different than, oh my gosh, you have to floss your teeth, it's one more way that we take care of ourselves and we take care of each other, because it has to be, the family has to go along with it. Just like if you're on a diet, the family has to cooperate with you, and you have to get their cooperation to survive, to lose weight or to sleep well or to be healthy, because it is that important. It's important for your health, because we have found in sleep science, you can find research papers out there that tell you that people who have sleep disorders have usually a greater propensity for heart disease, for obesity, and that having a sleep disorder can aggravate management of diabetes. And of course, if you're not getting enough sleep and you tend to gain weight, then you tend to develop diabetes. So, everything is connected to everything else. And like I said, I may be, some of you may be identifying with this, but some of you may think, oh, this is way too hard, I don't want to do this, but it may mean a change in your lifestyle, but it will be a change for the better. And also, if it's something that you've been trying to do for yourself and you need to get the cooperation of family members, sometimes having a legitimate set of information, helps them do that, because, you're asking them to change the way they behave too, like not calling and not expecting you to be there and do things. Because in the ultimate outcome, and for your readership and your listeners, is that you will be safer in the workplace, mm-hmm. you will be healthier, and you will your emotional state will be better, and your relationships will be better, and that your thinking will be clearer, and won't be influenced by the fact that you have these physiological consequences of insufficient sleep. And it shouldn't be any surprise to anybody. I mean, sleep deprivation is a form of torture. it's been used in combat situations to get information from people. And in fact, there were research studies done in the 30s in Europe where they actually did extended sleep deprivation with animals. Not as far as the published results. And you can actually kill the animal by having them sleep deprived. They can be healthy otherwise. And by simply forcing them to stay awake, the animal will die. So it's, we wouldn't tell people you don't have to eat. So we shouldn't be in our minds thinking you don't have to sleep, because sleep is just as important as nutrition. And, we don't expect people to miss meals. We shouldn't expect them to do without sleep. And the other question that typically comes up after that is, how much sleep do I need? That's an individually determined amount. And it has to do with, what is the amount of sleep that when you wake up, you feel refreshed, good, like everything's enough. For some people, that may be 6 hours. For some people, it may be 10. But it's individually determined. It's not determined by what the family does, like how many hours are allotted for sleep in the household. It's really individual. And as an individual, you need to honor that amount, and that's the amount that you need. It's not what can I get away with. And I hear people say that. As a nurse, I've heard other people say, I can manage on right. 5 hours or 4 hours. No, that's not what we're talking about. Like, you could probably live off of 600 calories, but you wouldn't die, but, you know, you wouldn't do so good. But, you know, it's a matter of what is the healthy amount for you and honoring that, and that the physiologic consequences occur every day. So, again, it's not back to I can cheat on my sleep all week, take a nap on the weekend, I've caught up. Right. Because you don't catch up. The physiological consequence occurs as, you know, in that immediate time period. So it's sort of like saying I'm a diabetic and I can eat this cake today, you know.
Now, the goal is still 8 hours. Isn't that kind of the center goal that we try to target for 7 to 8
hours?
Well,
I think the average, you know, they talk about an average is 7 to 8 to 9 in that range, but mm-hmm. it is individual. So, you know, I mean, I have a sister. Don't you call her after 8 o'clock, yeah. you know. And everybody knows that. And then, you know, some people, they prefer to stay up later. Now, we know that physiologically people have different sleep needs. You know, infants sleep like 20 hours a day, and then that gradually decreases. Well, then we know in adolescence that there is a shift in the sleep phase where adolescents physiologically tend to stay up later, mm-hmm. but they still have their sleep needs. And so then that puts them out of sync with our social expectations of school's going to start at 8, or those extra high school classes, we start them at 6:30 or 7. So in our country, we have a lot of teenagers who are sleep deprived because of the social settings that we have them on, and that that can be a big problem for them. And we see that play out sometimes in young adults, like people who go to college, is that, you know, we've, and I don't mean to bring in mental illness here particularly, but we see a lot of onset of mental illness in young adults who, for instance, go off to college and have a breakdown. Well, a college dormitory is not a proper sleeping environment. Everybody knows that. It's 24 hours, you know, on hyperdrive. And for those people who've been in a nice, controlled home environment where there is a dark time and a quiet time and there's a sleep time, that doesn't happen in a college dorm setting. And so these individuals can become physiologically stressed for sleep loss and then manifest, you know, their first acute episode of mental illness. It can be bipolar or schizophrenia, and can actually be triggered by that sleep problem. Hmm. So, you know, sleep is central to survival. And, you know, it's, you know, the wake-up squad certainly wants to educate everybody about the importance of sleep, but our focus is shift work disorder because, you know, the nature of our society is we have people who keep our society running, keep our society safe, whether they're hospital workers or air traffic controllers, police, first responders. These people are on the edge, and maybe I heard on our focus group the other day there was people who were on 4-hour shifts, sleep 4 hours and awake 4 hours.
Yeah.
And my hair was standing on end because the other piece of that information that your listeners need to know about is that your sleep needs to be consolidated so that saying, well, my normal need is 9 hours. I got 4 hours here. I got 2 hours. I got 3 hours. That's 9. The body doesn't accept that. Mm-hmm. You know, we can have 6 small meals, but as far as sleep, there is a whole set of cycles that we go through in our sleep interval, and that if you're having to start over with your sleep cycles, you never get to the period where you have specific kinds of sleep neurologically that refresh you. You know, we talk about people who are REM deprived, mm-hmm. Who, you know, only get to sleep in fits, and they, but we used to call it ICU psychosis, because in the ICU you never get any REM sleep because you don't sleep that long, and that people become disoriented and agitated and aggravated and have to be restrained or chemically, that sleeping at intervals is not healthy either. So, and I think we need to educate our institutions, our professional organizations, you know, our are, you know, they represent us. As I shared with you the other day, Mark, when we talked, I had a case study that I would work with my graduate nursing students, and it was a actual case in the Minneapolis area where a nurse had worked 12-hour shifts at night. She had worked several in a row. Over a course of 3 or 4 days, she had, maybe it was 3 days, she'd gotten about 4 hours of sleep. And she got off one morning and was driving home and ran over a city worker who was working on the side of the road and, you know, working on vegetation or something, and killed this woman. Mm-hmm. The city worker was a woman. And this person was being tried for manslaughter. And so I asked the students, I said, who's ethically responsible here? I said, is it the nurse? You know, she should have not driven home, you know, whatever. She needed to make a decision about that. Was it her supervisor who scheduled her for something that, you know, it's pretty, sometimes can be unrealistic. In my area, people work 7 on and 7 off. Mm-hmm. Is it the agency who says this is a good idea, or is it the profession who says, you know, it's an acceptable loss? You know, I don't know what you say. Most of the time we don't talk about it because we don't want to go there. And institutions don't want to go there because they say, well, this is an easier scheduling routine when we do them 12-hour shifts, 7 on, 7 off, because, it's a no-brainer. We run these schedules for weeks, you know, and the humans just have to make do. Well, my students, it was amazing. They were responding in a chat board. And one of them said, well, the nurse is not responsible because I do this too. And I said, wait a minute. We can't, you know, make ethical decisions based on perhaps your bad behavior. You know, you are responsible, and you're responsible to come to work prepared to work. And that's the way I look at it. You have to have your uniform, and you have to be clean and, you know, whatever those expectations are for whatever shift, and that's on a daily basis. And that would also mean sleep. But we have to question, you know, are people doing that? And that are people doing this because they think they can do something else during the day? And then what some of the students were telling me is that people who have these 7-on, 7-off schedules work at another hospital and do the same thing.
Yeah.
So they aren't really getting any downtime. You know, so their explanation of I catch up later doesn't hold any water. But again, are we just not talking about this because people say they like to have all that time off? Well, time off is one thing, but not being mentally, physically prepared to come to work and to be safe or to even drive home. I had other students tell me, my friend it was down at a hospital in Mobile. The nurse got off at night, and she came back in an ambulance. About 10 minutes later, she had fallen asleep and driven under a truck. Mm. And they said, well, she looked great at work. You know, I mean, that was in the news report. She was so perky and everything. She got in the car, and, you know, microsleep at 70 miles an hour, she was under a truck and didn't survive. Mm. So, you know, there are real consequences to these things, and we cannot ignore it any longer. Shift work is going to be around indefinitely until we have robots, I guess, and or RoboCop, I guess that's who. But but in the meantime, we have to either, you know, we have to advocate for good policy. We have to advocate for good practices that are built on physiology. I was doing some interviews with a gentleman who worked at a water company, and he was on a rotating shift that changed every couple days, and they rotated from days to nights to evenings in that fashion. That is absolutely against your own physiology.
Mm-hmm.
That your body can adapt better, not perfectly, but better going forward in time, changing from a day shift to evenings to nights. But going backwards is very, very demanding. And he was a spokesperson for, you know, yeah, I had it. And, you know, and when I started talking about it, other people I worked with had it. And, you know, we went to our doctors and got some treatment. So You know, and he said, and boy, do I feel better. And my wife says so, too, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like I'm just going on and on here because I can talk all day on this topic.
Well, I can tell that you're enthusiastic. Can you, and I want you to know that this is not an issue that law enforcement is immune from. You know that.
Yeah.
There have been a number of studies. We particularly focus on fatigue, which is exactly what you're talking about, where you try to get by or you're arrogant about getting by and you get less and less sleep and you create this deficit that you can't make up for, and that fatigue becomes an issue. And I know that one research study said that about 53% of the officers they surveyed were getting less than 6.5 hours of sleep. And another survey said that about 90% of the officers they talked to said that they routinely felt fatigued. And these were done by Brian Vila at Washington State University. And he is a former police officer and a sleep researcher. And he's published for the Police Executive Research Forum an outstanding book on tired cops and what kind of safety issue that causes for the public and for the law enforcement officers themselves. And it's a real problem for us. So let's get to the meat of the matter. What can we do about this? What can our regular practices be? And then for those people that are having additional problems, what can we do for them?
Well, you know, I think first we have to start at the individual level. You know, I mean, we all want to be healthy. And so we probably need to take a look at the sleep hygiene measures. And I've shared with you a short list and a long list.
Yes. I'll put those up on the website.
Goes through and talks about a lot of the things I've already been talking about. And you can also, you know, find information on sleep hygiene on the Internet. If you Google that term, you know, you'll get thousands and thousands of hits.
Okay.
And putting those into practice in your life takes a little tweaking. And that, you know, that's an important thing. The other thing is that, you know, at the workplace level, it could be something that if there are some of you that work for organizations or unions or whatever, this might be an important educational offering that you could offer to people, just like you should do about exercise and nutrition and, you know, having regular health checkups and things, because, you know, we all, you know, want to work and we have our careers, but we also want to live long enough to retire and to, you know, enjoy life.
Right.
And that when we're operating on the edge of everything, then we're, you know, we've reduced that likelihood. And so then there's that professional level. And then, you know, then it goes back to, you know, and when we don't do those things, I think is when we end up having things, you know, injunctions or laws or policies put in place that force people to do things. And some of the people that were on the blog that we were on earlier were truck drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that they've had things legislated on them about recording driving hours and that sort of thing. Because I know that some of your listeners have seen the consequences of truck drivers who you know, who fell asleep at the wheel and, you know, what the consequences were. That's been a big issue here in Alabama where I live, you know, prior to that time. And that's why they, you know, weigh them and stop them. And so that if you want to avert having something legislated that is onerous, then you take responsibility yourself. You know, our country is becoming overweight. We're starting to legislate, you know, what children can be fed in school. So if we want to be free, then we should be free to do the right thing personally, and that our profession should back up the healthy perspective, and nursing has sort of not done that, and institutions may not do it on their own because it doesn't, you know, quote, serve their interest if, you know, doing 12-hour shifts is easier for them. But what, you know, what is right is not always easy, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's a little, it is hard, you know, it is hard to do to eat right, to sleep right, stay out of trouble. You know? I mean, you know, I had two boys. It's like you're always telling them, you know, you can't do this and you can't do that, and we don't want to hear it, but.
Well, one of the things you told me already that I found interesting. I know a lot of cops that try to do a workout late in the evening or late in their day so that they can wear themselves out enough to go to sleep. And you said don't do heavy exercise because of your body temperature, and I'd never even thought of that.
Right, yeah. Well, and that's the thing is that a lot of people just don't have this background. It hasn't been included in our education. Mm-hmm. It didn't used to be in nursing textbooks. It wasn't in medical textbooks. So healthcare providers are sometimes woefully uneducated. And I've reviewed and rewritten a number of nursing chapters in nursing textbooks, which educate the basic provider. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people out there that don't know this stuff. And the handout that I shared with you, the two-page one, I was handing that out to students who were graduating from the university I taught at. And I said, this is not on the test. This is my gift to you. Chances are you're going to get this night shift because it does pay more, and everybody's got lots of debts and things when they get out of school. And, you know, there's a incentive for us to do that for our families. But, you know, you need this. You know, you need to know how to do this to survive it, you know, because that kind of work schedule can eat you up. You may be asked to stay, or you may face something that is extremely strenuous on a shift, you know, a big event of some kind, and you need to have the physical reserve and the emotional and mental reserve to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that if you're just minimally existing, you know, every day.
Well, one of the
certainly it's just too important. But many people are woefully uneducated.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think this whole thing with the air traffic controllers has sort of brought it up to people's consciousness about, you know, what's going on and what's happening. And we see the scary things that have happened, you know. And I want to touch on something that that may be kind of a sensitive issue is that, you know, I know that there's a greater risk of suicide among law officers, and part of that is, from my perspective, is because they're men. Men have a greater risk of suicide than women, and because they use a more lethal method, and law officers have weapons.
Right.
And that sleep problems can create depression and lead to depression, and that other situations in your life may be, you know, contributing to depression, and that this holds a risk factor for suicide, you know, which is not the way to lose a comrade or a friend or a family member, and that, you know, getting adequate sleep and dealing with depression and that sort of thing and seeking help is all part of that healthy perspective. So I hope, you know, I mean, that's probably something that people don't want to talk about, but I'm a nurse, so I get to bring up things that are, you know, personal and sensitive, but that's, you know, that's a piece of the pie too, you know, and so that, you know, when people have a chance to reestablish the sleep pattern and, you know, and that's the other piece. You need to be extremely regular with your sleep, even if you're an off shift. And so that whole notion of rotating shifts works against the body having a nice regular rhythm, because the body depends on rhythm,
mm-hmm.
you know, 3 meals a day and 8 hours of sleep. And
I know one thing that law enforcement officers are confronted with is when we work 12-hour shifts or 10-hour shifts and you get stuck with overtime, you get kind of stacked up into your relaxation and rest time.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, if that happens on a regular basis, and many, many agencies are becoming short-staffed right now because of the economy, it becomes an issue. I know one solution that many agencies have considered is putting in a sleep room so that at least officers can, if need be, get a nap, or if they're backed up on the back end of their shift, they don't have to go all the way home to get some sleep if they have to be back right away.
You know,
I noticed that your handout talked about naps. Can you talk about that?
She lived in a rural area, I think in Tennessee, in a hospital that was kind of different distance, and a lot of the nurses commuted pretty long distances, and they put in a sleep room for the nurses who were going off shift
mm-hmm.
because they could take a nap before they drove home, Or if something happened and they weren't going to get to go home, they'd have to be back on again shortly. They could sleep, and they had a, you know, a secure area to do that in. And I said, oh, my God, that hospital needs an award.
Yeah.
You know, because that is the right thing to do. And that if you don't want to kill off your people, you know, and have people, I mean, attrition of workers is a serious issue.
Right.
And also unsafe workers is a serious issue. That's a very good thing. That sounds really smart, you know, but who initiates that? Individuals, professional organizations, the institution, you know, probably if you said we'll have it, a lot of people would be thinking, boy, that's a smart idea. Where did that come from?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's about time. And, you know, maybe I think we probably need to expand that in our society. Where do you have that? Now, somebody did ask me relative to the air traffic controllers about having a nap guaranteed in a long shift or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd have to say from looking at human behavior that that's probably work against people coming to work ready to work.
Mm.
Because we're all human. We'll say, well, I can catch a nap so I can do more things today and, you know, not get my full allotment of sleep and I can catch up. Physiologically, if the nap is very long, say more than 15, 20, 30 minutes, you are already cycling into other sleep stages. And that when you're just still in the light sleep stage, what they call stage one, that, you know, you're easily awakened and can be functioning well. But if you sleep too long, and a lot of people will tell you, if I take a nap longer than so many hours, I wake up and I can't function. Mm-hmm. That's called sleep inertia. You know, there's an actual term for that. And so that having extended periods of sleep is napping works against you. And actually on your regular normal functioning, you should avoid naps, and particularly if you have any problem with insomnia, because you're interfering with your natural cycle and, you know, it's easy to lay down and just be zonked out and be there too long. So consolidated sleep is important. Very short naps may be refreshing for some people, but they are not refreshing for everyone.
Okay.
So that's the napping issue, I think, is a delicate balance. But the having a sleep room, yeah, I think for those kinds of situations, absolutely. I think you'll save lives. You know, you'll save the workers.
Right.
You know, and actually they'll say, somebody gives a darn whether I can function or drive home or, you know. And I would be curious. I would love to do a research study where we looked at how much sleep people got, law officers got, and what their rates of car crashes or things like that, you know, incidents, you know, what we call in nursing incidents, like drug mistakes and things like that.
Some of that has been done, and that the researchers talk about it being very concerning because of the issues of fatigue and the potential and seemingly higher incidence of accidents.
Well, and some agencies would probably not permit that type of study to be done because they wouldn't want people to know how little sleep people are functioning on. I had a graduate student who collected some preliminary data at a single hospital where the nurses were getting not very much sleep, and I said, my God, that hospital would never want people to know that you're taking care of their loved one and you'd only slept 5 hours in 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
You know. Part of it, the agencies don't want to talk about,
right.
You know, unfortunately, you can see their concern about liability because it is a liability.
Yeah.
You know, it's the truth. It's hard to do the good thing sometimes.
You have talked about a couple of...
Everybody has to police themselves, number one. And then if you're in, you know, I believe that, you know, nursing has not done enough about, you know, agitating for better policies about shifts and sleep and having two jobs and all that good stuff. So, you know, we're all behind the times, I think, because, the time is on us. We are a 24-hour society. And shift work is something we're going to So, I'm really excited that, Mark, John, that you've invited me to come and talk about this, and that, we have our website, thewakeupsquad.com,
mm-hmm.
and, we have the little symptom checklist that people can get, and that, I've sent ahead to you the sleep hygiene measures, which is like a laundry list, but you can find them anywhere on the Internet. Nobody's got copyright on those.
Okay.
And that we really need to talk about it more. We need to talk about it with our families and each other. And I've worked with people who said, who fall asleep at work. It's like, oh, my God.
Right.
There are some medical issues here, too.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, can you just touch on a couple of the true sleep disorders like insomnia or whatever the extreme
The three most common, three or four most common sleep disorders is sleep apnea,
mm-hmm.
and insomnia, and restless leg syndrome, mm-hmm. and then narcolepsy, which is very uncommon, but as far as we're talking about the top four, sleep apnea can occur in people who are overweight, but they can also occur in people who are thin, mm-hmm. who have a small or receding chin, narrow dental arch, et cetera. And that is characterized typically by someone who snores, but you can hear their sleep apnea because you will hear snoring, then you will hear no noise, and then when they start breathing again, you hear them go, you hear that choking, snorting sound, because what you've just heard is the apnea, the apnea of the sleep apnea, when they're not exchanging any air. What's interesting about that is they are trying to breathe. You can see their abdomen going up and down, but the soft tissues of the airway have collapsed. And this can happen over and over and over during the night, and these apneas can be long. They can be, to be scored in a sleep study, it has to be at least 10 seconds long. So 10 seconds is sort of our minimum to count, but they can be much longer. 20, 30 seconds, I was at a sleep study and the lady's oxygen level, supposed to be like 100, went down to about 40.
Wow.
And I asked the technician, I said, what are you going to do? And they said, well, if she doesn't wake up, we'll code her. And I said, I think I have to go.
Yeah.
but your oxygen level can drop very low, can cause arrhythmias, you can have a heart attack. So, that's sleep apnea. A lot of people get treatment with CPAP, continuous positive airway pressure, works very well, works 100% of the time if you use it. So there is sleep apnea, and a lot of people are familiar with that, and it's very treatable. And then insomnia is a problem with either falling asleep, staying asleep, or waking too early.
Mm-hmm.
Now, certainly, if we're worried, et cetera, we may have problems falling asleep. Again, the issue is to try to get consolidated sleep, not take naps. There are behavioral techniques to deal with insomnia. As far as medications, for insomnia, it's not recommended that people take sleeping medications regularly. That's generally used for short-term treatment. But there are behavioral ways to address insomnia.
Okay.
And then restless leg syndrome is when people have a sensation of creepy crawliness about their legs, their lower legs, etc. And these people appear to be very restless in bed. And a lot of people who have it, they say it's only relieved when they get up out of the bed, stand up, and sort of walk in place. And, of course, this is disruptive to the bed partner. But it's also disruptive to the person because their sleep is fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in the household, that's an issue, too, that they're waking people up. That can be medically treated. You don't need a sleep study for that. Your primary care provider can address that. And there is an organization who has information about that, the Restless Leg Society. And, it's a very treatable condition. It's also interesting because it's inheritable. It's also inheritable. Mm-hmm. So if someone in your family has it, it can be passed on genetically, that there's a propensity for that. And then narcolepsy is can also be genetically transmitted, and that's where an individual will fall asleep precipitously, and they may also have a weakness, catalepsy, where they, if they laugh too much, they get weak in the knees, and that is genetically transmitted too, and that's people should be treated for that, because that can be very serious, and young people can have it, older people can have it. So sleep disorders can affect anyone, and like I said, the best part about sleep medicine is that sleep disorders are treatable, sometimes at the level of your primary care provider, and then in some cases they will send people for sleep studies in a sleep lab, which is like an overnight thing, mm-hmm. and that requires pre-approval by your insurance company typically. But, you know, all of these things are doable. I had a friend who had sleep apnea. He was a scout leader, and he said that the kids made him pitch his tent really far because they couldn't stand his snoring. Well, then he finally, you know, got a diagnosis of sleep apnea, and he had a CPAP machine, but then he got an oral appliance that he could take with him to put in his mouth to deal with his sleep apnea when he was camping because there was no electricity. And I'll have to tell you the story. The first time he went, I said, well, how did it work? He said, I forgot the rubber bands for it. So anyway, but it does work. When you use it right, it works. So the kids didn't make him pitch his tent 100 feet away or something. So, but, you know, sleep is absolutely a fascinating and essential part of health. And did you have any more questions, John, for me?
No, I know that you mentioned the wakeupsquad.com. I know you had some other resources for my audience.
Yeah, there is an organization that sort of addresses sleep in general. It's a, you know, a nonprofit, non-commercial thing. It's the National Sleep Foundation, mm-hmm. and they have lots of resources. If you're looking for a sleep specialist in your area, you can look up on their little system, and they do studies every year of different. They do telephone surveys. They did one about children one year, one about women, one about adults, and this year they did one on safety. It always comes out in the spring, so you can find lots of good information there. And, you know, they're out there, too, saying, you know, sleep is an important part of health. Sleep has, insufficient sleep negatively affects your health. It negatively affects your safety, and the safety of others. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating. But they're a very good organization that you can get plenty of, bona fide, validated information. Okay. And then they have other linkages. So they're a real good resource for anyone.
Okay, and they're at sleepfoundation.org.
Wants to know more, and then maybe even wants to know something about pediatrics or geriatrics, you know, older adults or something. It's okay. A very good starting place.
And then you mentioned RLS.org, which was the Restless Legs Syndrome Foundation.
Yeah. Well, and I think they have they're mentioned as one of their affiliated links or whatever. So, yeah.
Okay.
And they're real good because a lot of people have problems with that. They used to just think they were kind of crazy, you know. I mean, you know, before we had names for disorders, people just thought they were nuts, you know, and they were probably treated that way by other providers. They said, well, there's nothing wrong with your legs.
Right.
Your legs look just fine, you know. But you know,
you also sent me the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, which is aasmnet.org.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have a way you can check for people who are board certified in sleep and the sleep centers that they operate at. And that they have a whole section for consumers as well as professionals in the area of sleep. So some of your listeners are very astute and they want to see the different, you know, the new science coming out and that sort of thing. And that's a good place to start there because they have an online sleep journal. They're entirely online now. Hmm. And that's one of the major professional journals. About sleep medicine, and the journal is called Sleep. That's what it's called.
That's
and So there are some excellent resources out there, and I can tell you the people who are the physicians who are board certified in sleep, they are super, and they are really nice people. I've worked in other professional organizations, and the sleep people are the very nicest.
Well, that says something there.
That's a good thing, yeah. Oh, that's one of the reasons I really enjoy working in sleep is people are, I guess they get enough sleep there in a good mood.
There you go. The last one that you sent me was talkaboutsleep.com. Tell me about that site.
I don't know that I sent you that one. Did I send you that
one? I thought that one came from you. Yeah, I have it in my notes.
Talk about.
Well,
no.
Well, people can go check out talkaboutsleep.com, and they can let us know what's
on there. I go to the wakeupsquad.com. I don't know about that.
Okay.
Other. All right. Yeah, I can't vouch for it. Don't Mirandize me on that
no,
one.
No,
okay.
I'm not. All right. I really appreciate your time and your expertise here, because I think this is an issue that law enforcement needs to talk about a whole lot more, and you've given us some issues to talk about, and I'm going to post some of this information up on the article on the blog, and I'll include your handouts on sleep hygiene and sleep and survival, and I think those are
uh-huh.
great.
Well, and that's the thing is that, you know, we've got the sort of checklist, I mean, the list of sleep hygiene measures, and for people who want to know more about it, there are plenty of places to go, and to, you know, people who really want to do more research and know more about the physiology, you know, it's all out there. It is absolutely fascinating, and it really makes sense when you put it all together, you know, that, oh, that's right, I know that the brain does this and the body does that. So it makes perfect sense. We've just been ignorant about it for a long time, you know.
Yeah.
Time is up.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it, and, you know, keep up the good work, because as you and I discussed, there are an awful lot of people out there that work odd shifts and are stretching their levels of fatigue to extremes. And law enforcement are not the only ones, but they're certainly the ones we focus on at Cops Alive. So thank you very much for doing what you're doing, and I appreciate your help in trying to make sure our listeners are safe and secure in their lives and in their profession.
Well, thank you, because I always remember, like when I was teaching nurses, is that you're the person that's going to take care of me. You know, I mean, the law officer is going to take care of me, too. I want you in good shape. You know, this is self-serving.
Well, that's good, but I think it's all win-win for everybody.
Right, right.
Thank you very much, Mary. This has been another edition of Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. I'm John Marks, and I invite you to tune in next time, where we will share information, tips, tactics, and suggestions to try to make you safe on the job and give you that opportunity to survive your career in law enforcement. Thanks very much for listening.